Welcome to the Cover Crop Strategies Podcast, brought to you by Montag Manufacturing. I'm McCain Vogel, Associate Editor at Cover Crop Strategies. In this episode, listen to a conversation with Etienne Sutton, a PhD candidate at University of Michigan, studying in the Soil and Agroecosystems Lab. She talks about her research on what factors affect cover crop biomass levels and how to improve cover crop performance overall. It's now my pleasure to welcome on to the Cover Crop Strategies Podcast, Etienne Sutton. We're going to be talking about cover crop biomass, how to increase it, how to quantify it, a lot of other questions around it. So I'll start this interview the same way I like to start all my interviews, which is just asking you to kind of introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us a little bit about how you first got into the world of agriculture, however long ago that may be now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for having me. So I'll just provide some context. I'm currently wrapping up my PhD at the University of Michigan, which isn't typically thought of as an agriculture school, but my training is actually in ecology. And I came to the world of agriculture through thinking about how we can use biological processes and interactions to make our food system more sustainable. So things like integrating legumes into crop rotations to sort of increase, this solar powered source of nitrogen, thinking about, interactions between pests and crops and like natural enemies, all of these really interesting ecologically based topics that we can apply to our food system.
All right. And as I mentioned in the beginning, the research that we're going to be talking about today is about cover crop biomass. So do you want to tell everyone a little bit about kind of the research you've done related to that and I guess where that's at today as well?
Absolutely. So a lot of my research so far has focused on cover crops sort of as this easy entry point to adding diversity onto farms. And so what I've been focusing on over the past few years is thinking about how when farmers are using cover crops, how can we get the most bang for our buck out of them in terms of environmental benefits, but then also from an economic standpoint? And so one of the things we know from previous research is that the benefits that we derive from cover crops is directly linked to the amount of biomass. So the more growth you get, the more benefits. The cover crops are going to be suppressing more weeds. They'll be recycling more of those soil nutrients. And with legumes, the more legume biomass you have, the more nitrogen they're taking out of the atmosphere and putting into your farming system. So that was sort of the starting point for this cover crop citizen science project that's become pretty popular at this point. And so the goal of that study is really just to look at variation in cover crop biomass across lots of different fields in the Great Lakes region, and then figure out what is driving that variation, with the ultimate goal being to produce management recommendations for how to improve cover crop performance.
And so these are on-farm trials that you guys have been doing, right? And so I guess talk a little bit about the different locations that you guys have been in. And then I'm also curious, and I'm sure our listeners are too, about some of the different tillage systems going on. And I guess, just the overall methodology for it.
Sure. So in this particular study, we're taking sort of like a purely observational approach. So it's not like a typical field experiment where we say, like, we have these specific cover crop treatments that we want you to try out on your farm. We're actually just looking at what farmers are already doing across the region. What does cover crop performance already look like based on these different types of management systems and practices? And so we had farms, most of them were row crop farms, but we also had a few like vegetable crop production systems in there. We had a wide range of soil textures included. Tillage ranged all the way from conventional to no-till for the past three decades. People had different types of crop rotations. So we really tried to get like a representative look at what, like, who is using cover crops and how they're using them.
And then remind me too, when this first started, it's been a couple of years now since it began, right?
Yes, it's been a few years. So this was sort of like a brainchild of mine back when I first started grad school. So in, I think it was about 2020, we started sort of developing the protocol that we ended up using to quantify cover crop biomass on these farms. So we just did that locally, you know, partnering with folks to see if we can use really easy things like basically plant height measurements and ground cover photos to estimate cover crop biomass. And then from there, we confirmed that it does indeed work. And so we deployed that protocol across six different states, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, starting in, it was fall of 2021. And so those folks ended up measuring biomass in spring of 2022 on their farms for their cover crops. And then we repeated it again the following year, and we'll be continuing the project in the next couple of years as well. But we're taking a little hiatus at the moment just while I finish my degree.
Understandable. Sounds good. So I guess let's talk a little more about, you know, you mentioned all these different types of soils and tillage practices. What are some of the patterns that you guys were able to see throughout that in terms of biomass?
Sure. So we honestly didn't see that there was a really strong relationship between tillage practices and cover crop biomass, but soil texture and other indicators of soil health did end up mattering quite a lot. Especially for cereal rye. So that was one of the main cover crops that people were growing. The most important thing, of course, was just growing degree days for increasing rye biomass. But we did see that rye biomass was actually significantly higher on fields with, it was clay loam, silt loam, and loam soils. So those really nice soil textures that, you know, unfortunately not everyone is able to work. But if you have soil textures other than those three, like if you just have sand, sandy loam, clay, we still think it's very much doable to like increase your cereal rye biomass. I think those folks just need to be a little bit more strategic in terms of making sure they maximize that rye growing season because they don't have necessarily like the optimal soil texture.
So would you say just like ideally planting earlier, I guess, what are some of the other ways that that people could increase their biomass?
Yeah, I would absolutely say planting earlier as much as possible is great. And then also planting green in the spring seems to be a really big one because a lot of these overwintering cover crops put on a lot of their biomass in the spring when it starts warming up. But I think that's something we need more research on is thinking about how, especially in more northern climates, how do we, you know, make the most out of these short cover crop growing windows?
Did you see any patterns in terms of like the cash crops being grown? I know you mentioned a lot of this was row cropping, but was there any major difference in terms of like corn growers or soybeans or other things that you guys saw there?
Yeah, so we did ask people about what crop they grew immediately prior to the cover crop. And we found this really beautiful synergy between sort of rotations that were more diverse in terms of their cash crops, also producing higher biomass cover crops. And those cover crops were these really beautiful, diverse mixtures. And that's mainly due to, as you would expect, these small grains in these more diversified rotations. They have a really long cover crop growing window. And when you're able to plant earlier after small grains, so in, you know, like August, September, as opposed to, you know, much later in the fall after corn or soy, people had way more species to choose from. And so that in part, just having a more diverse group of cover crop species growing led to more biomass overall. So yeah, I do really want to emphasize that those diverse cover crop mixtures actually produce twice as much biomass and contain twice as much nitrogen as the cereal rye cover crops.
We'll come back to the discussion in a moment. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Montag Manufacturing, for supporting today's podcast. Montag Precision Metering Equipment is helping producers achieve their yield goals while saving on seed and input costs. For establishing cover crops, Montag's family of seed platform equipment adapts to a variety of major brand delivery systems that will conserve seed and nutrients along with soil and water. Explore new options for your production and conservation goals with your Montag dealer. Visit MontagMFG.com or call Montag at 712-517-2775. And now, let's get back to the discussion with Etienne Sutton.
Obviously, drought has been a hot topic for a lot of our readers recently, and there's some concerns about it going into this year's growing season, as there always is. Were you guys able to see much going on in terms of biomass's relationship to lots of moisture versus some of the drier climates?
Yeah, that is an excellent question. And I do think that climate played a really big role in some of the results that we saw, including what I touched on before with the cereal rye. Those soil textures that performed better are typically the ones that are better at retaining water. So if we do have, you know, droughts that carry into the cover crop season or into the spring, that could definitely play a role. But then I'll also mention that for those cover crop mixtures, one of the really interesting findings is that mixtures with at least five or more overwintering species performed the best overall out of all the cover crops in the study. And we think that's because having more species growing really increases the chances that at least a few species will do well under a given set of growing conditions. So whether you get, a drought in the fall or really heavy rainfall in the spring, it seems like that diversity is key to making sure that at least some of your cover crop species pop up and produce a lot of biomass.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's really interesting. I also want to go back to what we talked about at the beginning with just kind of quantifying the biomass. What does that look like physically? Like, are you guys taking soil samples and then looking at that in the lab, or what does that actually look like for you guys?
Yeah, so it depends on the study in our case. So with this citizen science study where we partnered with a whole bunch of farmers across the region, in order to collect that much data, we needed like a really quick and easy protocol that farmers actually went out and did themselves. And so that involved like right before termination, they would head out to their cover crop field. They would take a few height measurements and then basically just ground cover photos of their cover crops. And then we use that to calculate the percent cover that their cover crop is providing, multiply that by the height measurements. And then we have these, they're called validation relationships, where we know that multiplying percent cover times height corresponds really nicely with cover crop biomass that we would traditionally measure with like a quadra out in a field with scissors clipping all of the cover crop biomass. So it's this really nice way to be able to collect lots of data in a, you know, short period of time. But in other cases, we definitely do more intensive sampling. Like if it's an on-farm experiment on only seven farms in one county, we'll go out and definitely collect biomass. We'll collect soil samples and look at sort of more of those mechanistic relationships, like what exactly is driving what.
Nice. That's super interesting. So I also want to talk a little bit more. You mentioned pests. Are there certain pests that are known for, you know, reducing biomass, or are there other good organisms that increase biomass? Were you guys looking at that at all?
So we did not ask specifically about that when we did the study. We have gotten feedback from a number of folks, though, who are interested in learning more about that. And so we're considering adding questions to that management survey that we used to sort of better understand relationships between management and cover crop outcomes. So we've had folks comment on things like slugs, miscellaneous things around pollinators, those types of things. So it's something we would consider looking at more closely in the future.
For sure. Yeah, a lot of our listeners are often complaining about slugs and snail pressure. And we actually had we had a researcher on this podcast a few weeks ago who has been studying different ways to capture slugs and snails, and has found that bread dough and actually beer in certain cases has been really effective in attracting slugs, which I thought was super interesting.
That is really interesting, huh?
Yeah. So I guess I'll let you comment. Is there anything else that you think is really important from this study that we haven't touched on yet that you want to kind of put out there?
Yeah, so I would say one of the other most important things we learned from the study is sort of, it's another synergy when you're stacking regenerative practices. So I already mentioned that, you know, these diversified crop rotations lead to more diverse cover crops that then produce more biomass. But we also saw that systems that had a history of organic amendment applications, so compost and manure, we're more likely to have higher cover crop biomass. So again, it's this really nice positive effect of sort of stacking these ecologically based practices. And we think the reason soil amendments in particular stand out is because they're so important for adding organic matter to the soil. So they're really improving soil health, improving, you know, nutrient cycling, water infiltration and retention. And then that feeds back into more cover crop biomass. So it's this like positive feedback loop where your sustainable practices are sort of like producing stronger effects together than they would on their own alone.
Okay. Yeah, that's super interesting too. I didn't even think about, so like grazing then I guess would be another thing where maybe that would help increase some biomass.
Yeah, we did ask about grazing in the survey and we didn't have many folks at all who had grazed their cover crops, but I would be really interested to see if there are any patterns that, you know, come up in future years, if we can get more folks to participate who are sort of integrating grazing into their cover crop system.
Sure. So then last thing we'll close on is just, you mentioned that, so it's kind of on hiatus right now. When might you guys be looking for more growers to get involved in this?
Yeah, so we are going to start sort of revamping the project in the fall of this year. So we'll be looking to get feedback from folks about how to sort of update the management survey, like if there were things that maybe we missed in previous years that we should add to it. And then, you know, right around the end of this year, we'll start putting out calls for participation so folks can register to include their cover crop field. And at that point, we'd send out the management survey for folks to complete. And then in the spring, they would do the field assessment, that the piece I mentioned where they'd collect the height measurements and ground cover photos. And I will say, in return for participating, we've always been really diligent about giving data back to farmers. So we do like personalized reports with, you know, data in terms of what biomass looks like on their farm compared to the rest of the farms in the study, estimates of the nitrogen content in their cover crops, things like that.
Nice. That's a really valuable tool. Well, we will be sure to, if you're listening and this sounds interesting to you, we'll be sure to keep you all updated on when this is getting back up and running and how you can get involved. So thanks again, Etienne, for joining today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
That's it for this episode of the Cover Crop Strategies podcast. Thanks to Etienne Sutton for that great discussion. The full transcript of this episode, as well as our archive of previous podcast episodes, are available at covercropstrategies.com/podcasts. Many thanks to our sponsor, Montag Manufacturing, for helping to make this Cover Crop podcast series possible. From all of us here at Cover Crop Strategies, I'm McCain Vogel. Thanks for listening and have a great day.